Blog Talk Radio.
The Home Depot has a huge selection of shingles and roofing supplies in stock right now, ready to go for building or rebuilding, and available at bulk prices. Plus, with the Home Depot's Pro Extra Rewards, you also get purchase tracking and volume pricing, so you can get what you need when you need it without searching for it. The shingles and roofing supplies you're looking for are ready and waiting for you at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. See store for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, who is none other than Master Farad Muhammad, the all Almighty, all-wise, true and living God, Allah, who has come to us this day and granted us a divine mercy and reminder in the persons of the last and most surely the greatest of the apostles, prophets, and messengers of God to ever live. We speak about none other than our leader, teacher, and guide for these final days of judgment, the most holy and humble, Elijah Muhammad. And we greet all of our listening and viewing audiences with the greetings of peace, love, and paradise in the original language of Arabic, which means peace be unto you. We say to you all in both their names of love, As-salamu alaykum. For those of you who may wish to participate in our discussion today, you're welcome to call in at 347-989-0855. That's 347-989-0855. Or you can hit us up with a message at Hiram1555@yahoo.com. That's Hiram1555@yahoo.com. As always, we'd like to thank you for giving us another hour of your day and another day of your time. We'd like to thank the thousands of you who listen live from around the globe and the thousands of you who will download us later from all of our affiliate sites, be it Hiram1555.tumblr.com, Twitter.com/Hiram1555, Facebook.com/Hiram1555, BlogTalkRadio.com/Hiram1555, and our main news blog, which is formerly TrumpetOfTruth.wordpress.com and also formerly SalamJournal.com and SalamJournal.org, which is now the Hiram1555 blog at Hiram1555.com. Again, my beloved family, let me say to you all, Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to another edition of the most powerful show for truth anywhere, bar none, on the face of planet Earth and beyond. This is your platform for black empowerment, black edification, black strength, black unification. This is the Star and Crescent Report. Our subject today is titled, The Echoes of All-Out War Are Becoming Louder and Louder. Before we get to this subject, I would like to thank Brother Rashid, Brother Gerald, Brother Macau, Brother Amir, my good brother, all of you, all these are my good brothers, and my good brother, Minister Earl, for the donations for the Hiram1555 blog and the Star and Crescent Report. I'd like to take the time out to thank all of these people and other people around the country who couldn't give but would love to. Let me say this. Sometimes when I'm doing a show, it's draining because you have to be on point on everything you say and do because everybody is listening and you have those who are listening just to nitpick. So we have to be on point in everything. And you have people that just dislike me. I've never done anything to them but tell the truth. And because I'm telling the truth without the respect of persons, you have people that dislike me and they'll have a grudge forever. But, you know, you think about it. As I was telling a good brother the other day, and this will tie into the echoes of war becoming louder and louder. You can have a brother whom we can disagree on something, and he would hate me for the next 40 years. But then you can have a brother who will curse them out, mistreat them, misuse them, and misabuse them, and they'll forgive them in a heartbeat. But this is that mind frame that we have. We've been abused. We've been put in a marriage that we should not be in, this marriage with America. And our spouse has been beating us, and we have identified with our spouse's brutality. So we can forgive everybody except those who help us, those who are friendly to us, those who are brotherly to us. We can forgive everybody but those people. You notice that in relationships, that's the same way. And so this is the working mind of the black man. He claims himself to be civilized, but in reality, he's a Negro. But I want to say this. I want to take the time out because all this ties in. I want to take the time out. This weekend, I was able to talk to a lot of people that I did not know listened to the show all around the country. And I would like to say assalamu alaikum to my good brother, Brother Minister Earl, who thought it best to come down here and just chill with his brother this weekend. Brother, thank you, brother. It meant a whole bunch to me to just come out the blue and just chill with your brother. And then also, let me talk to people who I did not know listened to the show. And then other people, after you left, I talked to other people who called and emailed, and I just took that time out to try to reach out to other people. Thank you, Brother Minister Earl, and thank you, Brother Rashid, Brother Gerald, Brother Macau, Brother Amir. Thank you. I mean this from the bottom of my heart to the top of my head, because this stuff is very time-consuming. And people only get this part of it when it's live on the air. They don't take we're going to do it anyhow till Gabriel blows his horn. Now, to the echoes of all-out war, which are becoming louder and louder. Brothers and sisters, Muhammad says to us, and I want to start it off with this, because this encompasses everything that we've talked about and everything that we are about and everything that we're saying and we're trying to prove and show to you on an economic scale, on a political scale, a geopolitical scale, and a cultural scale. Muhammad says, this is why we have a day of judgment, to test out all of these things that people claim to believe in. Stop right there. So if your brother here says, if you feel you have the truth, I know I have the truth, then let's go head up, and I call out the number 347-989-0855. This is not out of the order of divine, because this is the moment of judgment. These are the days of judgment, and we have these days to test out all of these theories. All right? We're looking at a world that is being engulfed in flames now because everybody has tested out a theory that may have worked for a period of time, but these it now is all crumbling and falling, and all of their theses that they have built their world on, or their economic model on, or their political model on, is now crumbling and falling to pieces. So Muhammad says, this is why we have a day of judgment, to test out all of these things that people claim to believe in. Allah says in his holy Quran that on the day of on the judgment day, if you bring a god up besides myself, you will not be able, in words to say, to win. There is no God, he says, but me. I am Allah, the best knower. I am Allah. Think over that. If you want to make a spook out of me, look at me good. I'm not a spook, but I am Allah. The reason I say that is because this has direct correlations to all of these theories out here that everybody has. From a spiritual level to an economic model, all of them are pancaking and exploding, you understand? Because they have no foundation to stand on. Maybe once in a while before the storms of judgment and the winds of justice blew on them, they looked sturdy. But now that the storms are blowing and the winds are beating down their hedges, you're seeing them rocking to and fro. You see the siding coming out of their theology. You're seeing the roof come off their perception and their reality. Because this is what judgment is for. So, when we look at this and we see the white man's world, think about this. They are anxious. They're angry. They're confused. They're divided. Why? Because everything that their world was predicated on is being uprooted. Prior to that, you thought everything that they said and every thesis and every analysis that they gave to you were the unadulterated truth. But God says, let them tarry for a while. Right? They must do this so that my plan be established. So we're looking at the plan of God being established, the exposure of the corruption, the exposure of the hypocrisy, the exposure of the racism, the exposure of the ineptitude of this world and its governing bodies. And this is bringing us closer and closer to conflict after conflict after conflict after conflict. I recall telling you on the show, year after year, month after month, week after week, you can go back and look at listen to some of the shows. I don't listen to a lot of the old shows, but I want you to go do it. I told you that Messenger Elijah Muhammad said Turkey was going to turn and was going to fight on the side of the Muslims. I'm not saying that this is the point where they do that, but the signs are becoming stronger. The disagreement between Turkey and NATO, the mistrust, when trust is broken, unity is impossible. You only have a fake unified front, and this is something that's hard to get through to some of the so-called believers. If you cannot trust your brother and your sister, it is impossible to move as a unified front for a very long time. You understand? So look at what was once held in the dark in the geopolitical, in the political realm, in what is called NATO. And look how it's should look into. You say, what does this have to do with me? If these things do not take place, the black man of America does not get free. You understand this? This should be something that you should be hoping for. If prophecy does not fulfill itself, then God is not all-powerful. The black man is what the white man told you you are. And we know these things are not true. So we must look at prophecy. Now, I want you to see something. Because Messenger Muhammad was saying these things in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. He was telling you that the Turks would not be destroyed in the judgment because they would fight on the side of the Muslims. He said these things. We have writings, we have books, we have articles, we have lectures. This is why America would give weaponry, an advanced weaponry, to all of her NATO allies except for Turkey. You understand me? Because she is not a fool. She is no fool. She understands that one day these weapons would be turned on her. Turkey asked for warplanes that could target Israel. America wouldn't do it. It wouldn't sell it to them. So what the Turks did, they overrode the codes of their F-15s, F-16s. And now they can fire on anybody. Turkey asked for missile defense. America would not give this to them. See, I have to break this down for those of you who are listening who are new. This is prophecy. I know you're used to getting it like the church people teach. But it has no sustenance or little sustenance. And so what I have to do is show you what is going on in real time, so that you can understand those words in your Bible, those words in your Holy Quran, so you can get a great understanding of the time that you are now living in and what is happening, what is to happen, and what must be done. Because we are hearing the echoes of all-out war, and they are becoming louder and louder and louder. You understand? So the Turks asked for missile defense. America wouldn't give it to them. She would only deploy her missile defense systems there and would take them back whenever she felt the need to. I'm getting to something. So, Muhammad says that Turkey, being the second largest member of NATO, would eventually turn and fight on the side of the Muslims, right? We know that Turkey is involved in ISIS and all of this stuff, and we know there's a lot of intricate things behind closed doors, right? But what is bursting forth in front of us is the divide, the political and governmental divide between all NATO nations and their most strategic nation, Turkey. Why did I say the most strategic nation? Why didn't I say America? Why did I say Turkey? Because America needs Turkey as the linchpin for her plans in the Middle East and Central Asia and the Balkan states. She needs Turkey. Because Turkey is the gatekeeper to the Black Sea. Through Turkey, you can dominate the Black Sea. You can prevent the breakout capacity of Russia with her navy. You understand? You can go into the underbelly of Russia, Iran, and China through Turkey. You can try to impose your will and dictates and balkanize the Middle East through Turkey. You see this right now, this policy, which is collapsing right now, that America tried to impose. They need Turkey. You understand? But all of this is prophecy. The disagreement, the disillusionment, the confusion, right? How it would burst forth from behind closed doors to the forefront of geopolitics, world news. I want you to listen to this clip here. We're going to try to get in some clips because I know the time always is going at 100 miles an hour, okay? And so I'm going to try to get as many clips in as I can, and I'm going to try to explain this stuff, and we'll connect it. And then as we talk on the geopolitics, we'll move closer and closer to economics, and you'll see how all this ties in. This is theology. This is the fulfillment of prophecy. These are the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And more so, these are the teachings of all of the prophets of old. But Muhammad has just the greatest in-depth, the greatest insight, and the greatest sight on these things. Because he is directly from the Lord of the world. So we call him the Rosetta Stone of Truth. Right? If you want to learn learn the language. What's that motto? If you want to learn the language, very good. You use Rosetta Stone. We want to learn the language of truth very well, the language of prophecy very well, the language of theology very well. So we are opening up our Rosetta Stone of truth, Elijah Muhammad, to get an accurate and detailed understanding of what we see before us today. So listen closely, and we'll address this right after this two-minute clip.
Top story, Turkey is pulling its troops out of a NATO exercise after President Erdogan says he was branded an enemy in the alliance's internal messaging network. And Norway's defense minister has already apologized for the gaffe, which further worsened relations between Ankara and NATO. With more, here's Paula Sleer.
Well, this is a perfect example of how small things can blow up and add to deteriorating relations in a powerful military alliance. It happened during a NATO training exercise in Norway, where a poster was unveiled of enemy countries. And the last thing you would expect is for the name of the Turkish President Erdogan to be on that poster, bearing in mind that Turkey is a key player in NATO. Now, the Turkish President Erdogan has responded by saying he's pulling out the 40 Turkish soldiers who were participating in this exercise.
They used an enemy chart in Norway. In that chart, there was my name and Ataturk's picture. I gave instructions to immediately withdraw our 40 soldiers. There can be no alliance like that.
Turkey is the second largest NATO military force and also a key American ally in the Middle East. So it's not clear how this incident is going to affect relations. The Secretary General of NATO has apologized, saying that the mistake was conducted by a civilian contractor and not an employee of NATO, and that it certainly doesn't represent their views. An investigation is underway. But it is perhaps ironic because the Secretary General is himself from Norway, where these military drills were taking place. So he's having to apologize for a mistake in his own country. The relationship between NATO and Turkey is already shaky. You have the Turkish President Erdogan criticizing concerns that were expressed by NATO over a military deal between Turkey and Russia involving S-400 anti-air defense missile systems. At the same time, NATO has repeatedly criticized Erdogan's apparent, what they say is an apparent autocratic tendencies. And there's also been a lot of scrutiny regarding Turkey's rule of law and democracy, particularly when it comes to NATO membership. So the last thing the relationship between Turkey and NATO needs is for something like this to happen, even if NATO is insisting that it was a mistake.
So Turkey stands as one of the two key members, not Britain, not France, not Germany, but Turkey stands as one of the two key backbones of NATO. Why? Because it has the second largest military out of all of them. It has the most strategic presence in the region that America wants and needs to be in so that she can continue to dominate. From Turkey, she can go into Russia's and China and Iran's underbelly. She can go down into Iraq and in Syria and all around, and she can go into Afghanistan. And from that, Turkey sits center because she can keep a grip on Europe. Plus, she can use Turkey to also resupply her troops that are continually invaded and occupying Africa. You understand? But without Turkey, this becomes more of a distant thought for America. You understand? So listen. Muhammad says, they're always asking me some kind of question, wanting to know, can some of us get by? Talking about white people. I told them I'll give them a description of Egypt when Moses went out of Egypt. Some of the Egyptians went out with him. I said, this doesn't mean that every white person is going to be killed on that day. No. Many will survive that day, but they will go back to their own, like the Turkish people. They're not going to be killed because Allah had told me that they would not. They've been trying to practice Islam, though they are white people. They try to practice Islam and are Muslims. They are Muslims by their practice, but by nature, he's like you and all of the rest of you. By practicing the faith of Islam, God gives him an extension of time. See? So this is why you see a breaking of sorts publicly in Turkey. I'm not saying that this is the turning point, but this is one of the stones. these things in perspective so that you can actually get an understanding of what's taking place, okay? Because I know when you read the news and I know when you hear this stuff, you get, especially a lot of you so-called Muslims, you like to get this stuff mixed up with the Alex Jones propaganda, you know, and all of this Masonic stuff. You like to mix all this foolishness in. When you can come to the Rosetta Stone of truth, Elijah Muhammad, and do a comparative analysis and get the truth unadulterated. But you don't want that. You want it fixed up, mixed up, because that's the way your slave master made you. Crazy as hell. But I want you to listen to this, okay, because this goes along with what we just played, and this is a minute and 27 seconds.
Relations between NATO and member state Turkey have fallen further. President Erdogan has accused the alliance of targeting not only himself, but also the Turkish nation. RT's Paula Slia explains what went wrong.
Well, essentially what happened is you had a NATO military training exercise that was taking place in Norway. And during that exercise, a chart was unveiled that showed the enemies of the alliance. And there listed was the name of the Turkish President Erdogan, as well as a photograph of Turkey's founding leader Atatürk. Now, a furious Ankara withdrew its 40 soldiers from that training exercise, with the Turkish president saying that this was an affront to the Turkish people.
This is not a personal or party issue. The target is Turkey and the Turkish nation.
Now, the Secretary General of NATO, Stoltenberg, has apologized for what he says is a mistake that was carried out by a private individual contractor that in no way, he says, represents the views of NATO. At the same time, an investigation is underway. An apology was also put forward by the Norwegian Defense Minister. He said that this did not represent the views or the policies of Oslo. But Ankara has not accepted either apology, with the Turkish President Erdogan saying, to quote, "A simple apology cannot cover disrespectful behavior."
See that? Do you see what's going on? There's a great geopolitical and political divide within the greatest terrorist organization on the planet, NATO, the North Atlantic Terrorist Organization. And with Turkey being in doubt, this throws a monkey wrench in the desires and in the plans of the empire. Do you see what I'm talking about? You see how Allah fixes this thing? The devil thinks that he's made progress and headway for so long. Then the bottom drops off. You understand? So without trust, there can be no unity, right? Because, listen, if I'm always suspicious of you, how can we unify? If I'm always suspicious of your motives, how can we be brothers? Or sisters and brothers, truly, if I'm in a marriage with you and you never trust me, how can it be productive? Trust is the basis, the foundation of any relationship. According to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, the definition of the word trust means assured reliance on the character, ability, strength, or truth of someone or something, one in which confidence is placed. Dependence on something, future or contingent. Reliance on future payment for property delivered. Listen to this good. I'm going to go back to this first one. I want to go back to this. Because with this so-called alliance, an alliance, right, is a so-called unified gathering. Is that not right? With all focused on the stated purposes, aims, and goals of what is charted out in the alliance. This is based upon trust. And if there is no trust, according to Webster's dictionary, which gives us the definition of the word trust, there can be no unified or cohesive movement or policy. Because the word trust means assured reliance on the character, ability, strength, or truth of something or someone. One in which confidence is placed. And Erdogan says that America has lied to us many times over very important national security interests, whether it's in Syria or Iraq or with Russia. America has lied to us and have not been forthcoming to us. This is what it said. So what is he saying? 1 and number 2 in the alliance. Do you see the fallout of judgment? Do you see the manifestation of Elijah Muhammad's words? This directly relates to the black man and woman of America. Because if these things do not take place, there is no freedom for you and I. Understand that. So from that, I'm going to go to a quick clip. This is 33 seconds. Listen, as we heard that they said Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, issued 2 apologies, and the NATO alliance issued 2 apologies, right? Well, this is Turkish President Tayyip Recep Erdogan, and this is what he had to say concerning the apologies of NATO to his nation.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has rebuffed NATO apologies after the military organization in Norway apologized for putting Erdogan's name on an enemy poster during a military exercise in Norway. Erdogan said such disrespectful behavior will be hard to forgive. The incident took place during NATO's Trident Javelin exercise aimed at increasing coordination between NATO allies. Erdogan withdrew 40 Turkish troops from the drill in protest, adding, quote, "It's not possible to have this kind of alliance."
See that? Recep Tayyip Erdogan says that it will be hard to forgive that. And it is not possible to have an alliance like this. You see the breaking? You see that? Elijah Muhammad talked about the breaking of NATO. You see that? And he specifically mentioned Turkey and how Turkey would eventually fight on the side of the Muslims. Is this the turning point? We don't know. But all of the signs are there. You understand? And this relates directly with the subject at hand. The echoes of all-out war are becoming louder and louder. So you can't deny that Elijah Muhammad warned you of this day. And all of these things are happening in a time where America is being constrained militarily. Once she was unrestrained, and now with the resurgence of her main enemy, Russia, and her other enemy, China, and even a so-called regional power, Iran, she feels constraint on the hyperpower that she once bragged on having. And the more she moves, the more she alienates, the more people form alliances outside of her power, and the more they move to neuter her by doing trade and carrying out transactions outside of dollar-denominated assets. You see the connection here? And without the dollar, you have no political clout, you have no military authority, and you have no domestic tranquility, which means that there will be revolution and plenty of it within her own borders. The freeing of the black man and woman here in North America is underway. It is a very beautiful time to be a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. And Muhammad teaches us, he says, that the nations would start forming alliances outside of America. And I want to say this to those of you who are listening as I'm on this subject. We see what's going on in the Middle East. We see Russia deploying her strategic bombers. We see China funding this whole foray. A lot of you don't see that, but China have a hand in this also. You understand? Because of her strategic interests. We see Syrian troops on the move, right? We see America's push. She loses here, she goes there. She's pushing into Africa. She's moving, and I want to say this for those of you who like to look at Press TV. I forewarned you of this during Muammar Gaddafi. Press TV has many beautiful articles and tells a lot of truth. But when it comes to maybe nations that they don't like, they report the same way that the West reports. You understand? And if you think I'm lying, you can go back and read all of the articles that they published about Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. And it mirrored to the letter and spirit the Western things on Muammar Gaddafi. And I have yet, and I've been scanning Press TV to see if they had a lot of positivity about Mugabe. And And I've yet to find anything about that at this moment in time. So to be, I just want to say that to be aware of that, okay? Now, Muhammad says that there will be alliances made outside of American power. And as I was saying to those of you who are listening, that as America suffers loss after loss, defeat after defeat, and she becomes more and more tied down by debt, all of these fiefdoms, these sheikdoms, these so-called kingdoms, like Saudi Arabia, like Bahrain, like the United Arab Emirates, all of these made-up nations and their so-called hierarchy, their monarchs, will collapse. This is why they're under so much strain. This is why they're causing so much division, because they believe if they can preoccupy Syria or Iran or the other nations with war, they can live another day. But Muhammad said that they would fall like dominoes. And we're looking at the desperation in the Saudi monarchy, because this is directly related to you. You understand? You hear it. I hear it. Hear what? The echoes of all-out war becoming louder and louder. I'm going to go to this clip here. This is a 8-minute clip. Now, I want you to listen to this. Some of the clips will be long today because we need to hear some of this stuff. Remember what I just told you, that Muhammad said alliances will be forged and formed outside of the American presence and power. Now, one of her main allies, the number two in NATO, is forging a strategic alliance with Iran and Russia. I want you to listen closely to this, all right? Because this means that nations are preparing to push America out. Matter of fact, I read that before to you. Let's go to, before I play the clip, 171 and 72, okay? 171, 172. What did he say? Muhammad says, America and England deposited their little brother, Israel, on foreign soil, Palestine, which is Arab land. They deprived the Arabs of their own land and sent them into exile. This injustice against the Arabs is now costing America the power and authority that she once exercised in the East. Now she's being challenged by her own so-called ally of Turkey. She's being challenged by Russia, a resurgent Russia. She's being challenged by emboldened and empowered Iran. And all of these are effects of the blowback of American imperialism. Right? Because America alienated Russia, and they could not form an alliance, and she lied and lied and lied and moved her military alliance right up to Russia's border. So Russia's getting some get back. Iran was almost neutered by America, but America wanted to do a double take and take out Saddam Hussein, who was their man at one time, to keep Iran subdued. They took him out, and Iran flourished. You see, these are the direct results of arrogance and empire and hubris. So Muhammad says, this injustice against the Arabs is now costing America the power and authority that she once exercised in the East, that she once. So as he was speaking to us, he was telling us that she was in a decline then. We just could not see it. But it would become more and more evident if we were to focus over there. Why the hell is Elijah Muhammad talking about the Middle East? Huh? Because if he's the messenger of God to us, why isn't he saying, well, the Bible says such and such, and the Quran says such and such? He is teaching us things that are directly related or correlated to our salvation, our deliverance, and the destruction of our oppressors. Do you ever think about that? So Muhammad says, this injustice against the Arabs is now costing America the power and authority that she once exercised in the East. Then he gives us something to look forward to. He states, she is on her way out of the Near East. Uh-oh. America ain't just going to leave. She's doubling down. She got 13 illegal military bases that we know about in Syria. She got dozens in Iraq. Right? She's all over the place in Central Asia. Well, Central Asia borders the Middle East. Looks like she's going to be there forever, according to her. North Africa, and that's the Middle East. That's the MENA region. Well, how did she come out? This means bloodshed and plenty of it. So before she is forced out, we must see bloodshed and plenty of it. What is on the menu every time you turn on the news? War, terrorist attacks, bombings, right? In the Middle East. That is to push America out. Russia is more invested in it now. I told you a long time ago when everybody was saying that Russia was not going to get involved with Syria. I told you. I said she has to. Allah set that up like that. She has to save Syria. She has to fight along Syria's line, because if she does not fight, America will strangle her economically and then launch a massive first strike military attack on her. Because that pipeline of stand goes straight up through Syria that America wants to establish to choke off Russian gas from the European market. And also that America would install a puppet regime in Syria. And then this puppet regime would demand Russia remove their military bases out of Syrian territory. And this would box Russia into the Black Sea. And her military would be sitting ducks for NATO. You see? But Muhammad says, and the Muhammad of 1400 years ago, when he received a revelation from the God, that Gog and Magog would sally forth against each other. See, God would move the constraints between these two. Because one has been in power and one has eyed that one that has been in power because they think that they deserve to be the number one power. And so they will sally forth. And look what's going on. Whenever America loses somewhere else, she starts some trouble somewhere else. Now she's in Ukraine talking about selling missiles. Right? She's in Japan talking about F-35s. Everywhere she goes, she's a snake, a viper, spreading venom whatsoever she slithers. But they always say, to kill the snake, you got to do what? Kill the head. And her power for the empire is derived from, her bite is derived from what? The fangs of the dollar. They must be decapitated to bring her low. So we see alliances being forged outside of American power, outside of American influence, outside of American tutelage and dominance. This is prophecy, because Muhammad says, when you see these things happening, know that your salvation lies in the balance. So we're looking to see these things. And if we see these things with the naked and the physical eye, the mental eye can then think and come to a logical conclusion that the end of American empire is near. So we should be rejoicing. All right? I want you to listen close to this 8-minute clip here.
Well, Iran's foreign minister has called on regional countries to contribute to peace processes while slamming Saudi Arabia for its warmongering policies.
Unfortunately, we are witnessing the fact that some countries in the region, like the Saudi regime, are mainly after sowing discord, creating divisions, tensions, and crises. That's why they gain nothing but blowback. If they change tack, they may also contribute to the peace in the region instead of causing wars.
Zarif made similar remarks in an earlier tweet in which he described as ironic Saudi Arabia's anti-Tehran accusations. He says Riyadh is fueling terrorism, waging a war on Yemen, blockading Qatar, and fomenting crisis in Lebanon. While accusing Iran of destabilizing activities, Zarif is now in the Turkish city of Antalya, where he met with his Turkish and Russian counterparts to discuss the latest developments in Syria. The top diplomat says the trio are working to build on a ceasefire achieved earlier and to prepare for inclusive dialogue among Syrians. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has hailed the Antalya talks, saying the three countries have agreed upon all key issues regarding the Syrian peace process.
Работа в The work was very productive. We agreed on all the key points, and we will report to the President our assessments on how to move forward and how to strengthen the Astana process, which should create the most beneficial conditions so that the Geneva process might finally find some effective tools to resolve the issues presented in UN Security Council Resolution 2254.
The present ceasefire deal in Syria was clenched during the intra-Syrian talks brokered by Russia, Turkey, and Iran in the Kazakh capital in May. The three countries also agreed to establish de-escalation zones in Syria during the Astana talks. The safe zones cover the provinces of Idlib and Homs, as well as the eastern Ghouta region near Damascus and the country's southern border with Jordan. I'll turn to Florida, joined by Mr. Scott Ricard, former American intelligence linguist. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, Scott, let's talk about the significance of these talks and between which countries and the significance of actually this happening, where it is and with these entities.
Well, it's a very strange turn of events to see Russia and Turkey as allies against the United States and their NATO allies as well, including Israel, including Jordan, also, unfortunately, including Saudi Arabia and Qatar. These are a tremendous turn of events when you see that the United States actually tried to overthrow Erdogan and then actually was involved with Erdogan in financing these terrorists. You know, Muhammad Ali was absolutely right when he was talking about the last battles in Syria and the Americans helping the leaders of this ISIS group to escape. This is amazing that this is continuing even in the last gasp of the Americans' attempt to overthrow the Assad regime. Unfortunately, just looking at the current recommendations that the U.S. has been making, unfortunately, within the U.N. and elsewhere, they're still going full steam ahead with their plans, and the U.S. policy is absolutely aligned, unfortunately, with Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is working diligently with France as well. They just sent Hariri up to Paris to basically solidify the French Foreign Legion's participation moving forward against Lebanon and Syria. So this is a really sad state of affairs. The Americans were absolutely cut off at the knees by Russia, by Iran, and by Hezbollah, who's turned out to be a tremendous influence in the region. And the fact is that Turkey taking the right turn here in history, and seeing Turkey and Russia as allies is a huge surprise to me, given the history there for centuries. So this is a great turn of events for Turkey. Hopefully Turkey will move in the right directions going forward and will not be influenced by a Western coup, or will not be influenced, unfortunately, by Western monetary gains as well.
Well, tell me about that as far as the political strategic perspective, because if we look at during these years, of course, of the situation in Syria with the terrorists being there, we saw a gap even further between Russia and Turkey. And of course, we saw actually the Turks even shooting down a Russian plane, and also a gap between Iran and Turkey because of the Turkish support for the terrorists. And now there has been this total turnaround and perhaps a political coup, many would say, in order to keep the country, Syria, intact and the region. I wanted to talk about the significance of this in a future alliance with these entities. Of course, we have Russia, we have Iran, we have, and we at the table. But of course, we also have Hezbollah involved in it. We have the situation in Iraq that has happened. Tell me about turn of events in general and as far as future alliances.
Well, it's extremely strategic, but yet again, it's historic. But I would also add that it's very it's not a solid alliance at this point. There are many individuals within the Turkish military and the Turkish political system that are very anti-Syrian and are extremely motivated to basically regain a lot of the territory that was taken from Turkey during the Sykes-Picot, as a result of the Sykes-Picot agreement. So those individuals are still in Turkey. A lot of them have been arrested. A lot of them have been imprisoned by the attempted coup that was initiated by the Americans. But given the fact that Erdogan, if he is able to continue the progress that he's made against the Western influence on his government, and given the fact that he has also realized that the Americans have aligned with his enemies. I mean, think about it. The PKK and the YPG are absolute enemies of Turkey and of the Erdogan government. And this has become the main focus of what really is becoming the SDF, which has nothing to do with Syria. These aren't Syrian defense forces. These are absolutely another terrorist organization like Al-Qaeda, like ISIS, like Daesh. This is another organization that the Americans are backing heavily, that are heavily opposed to the Erdogan government. So Erdogan is making this move saying, look, I don't like where the Americans are going with this. I want to stay close with the Iraqis, and it looks like I'm going to have to accept the Syrian government and try to oppose my internal enemies that wanted to regain the territories from Sykes-Picot,
okay.
And we'll put that either on the back burner or alleviate that from our future strategy. So it's interesting that you have Turkey, Iran, and Russia meeting in Ankara. And so I think that out of this meeting, we may see a future alliance that will be an extremely great challenge to the West. And I'm interested to see how the West will respond, because there's still a lot of NATO support in Turkey, and there's still a lot of NATO funding.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a lot less jobs being offered in Turkey now. If you would have looked a year ago, there were tons of jobs on the U.S. Government websites. But
all
now,
right, Scott, we're
going
to have to leave it there. So sorry, I'm out of time.
See how America tried to entice the people with jobs, and her people are starving to death. You see how an alliance is being created and formed outside of American power. But I got an email from a listener to the show, and they have been watching this situation closely. And I'm glad that they did their research. They told me that I spoke on this situation before the real outbreak of hostilities, and I told the people on this show that Erdogan and Turkey will regret working alongside America, because America will eventually turn against Turkey and try to do the same thing and balkanize Turkey. She would use the same elements against Turkey. And I was looking, I said, nah, is this something? Somebody listened to the show real good, and then they've been paying attention to the geopolitics and realized that what we've been saying on the show is absolutely correct. It's absolutely correct. I'm going to go to the phone lines real quick, then we're going to come back to some more clips, because I know the time is burning down. So let me go to our good brother, Rashid. Brother Rashid, I say unto you, As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum, brother. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, brother?
Just fine, brother. I was going to speak on it, but you read my mind again, and with Ray McGovern talking about the PKK and the Kurdish forces against Syria. America has left Turkey with no other choice but to turn east. If she do not turn east, she got a civil war in her country. They done forced Erdogan them in a position where he got to turn east, or else his country gonna fall.
That's right.
They left him with no other choice. And getting back to what the messenger was saying, you see, a lot of the books the messenger was saying, you know, it was actually after the 60 to not exceed 70, after the 60 years have been up, then you'd be reading the messenger's books, like we said before. You were talking about 24-hour-a-day talk shows, 24-hour-a-day sports shows. That wasn't happening in the 1960s, but it's happening especially now. You can take one of the messenger's books and throw it up, and wherever it lands, it's talking about something happening today. Elijah Muhammad was the man. He was right on time, and we, like you said, it's very, very, you should be very happy to be a follower of the messenger, because you have the future. You know what everybody else don't see. The rest of the world, they had told us, because the time had not taken place. You know, most people back in the 60s when the messenger was saying it, they would take it and discard it. But now, if you kept your head in the messenger's book, you know step by where everything is going to take place. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you, my brother. Again, brother, it's absolutely right. And so we look wise in the face of people that are listening to us, but we get it from the Rosetta Stone. When the brother said that, brother, you spoke about Turkey doing this, and if Turkey does such and such, America was going to eventually make Turkey pay him do this. Yeah, I got it from Elijah Muhammad. I knew what was going to happen because I looked at the Rosetta Stone. I listened to the Rosetta Stone, and I was able to discern the truth from that Rosetta Stone. It's a very beautiful time to be a follower of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And again, America wants to use Turkey as a central location to control Europe, the Balkans, the underbelly of China, Iran, and Russia, which is Central Asia. And that's why she's still in Afghanistan, losing more and more territory, more and more territory, more territory. So think about this. She's losing more and more territory, more and more territory, and more and more territory, back to back to back to back to back. She's doing that. Yet she's doubling down on failed policies over and over. This shows you that she's insane. What did Einstein, what was attributed to Einstein? Doing the same thing over and over and over again is insanity if you expect a different result, right? So America continues to use these same policies, even though they blow back the fact it's weakening the empire. But she sees Afghanistan as an underbelly. But if this wasn't a judgment, because we'll say something like this, well, why won't this country do this and why won't this country do that? You got to understand that God is the orchestrator of all of these things, and he's keeping certain people blind, and certain people can only see certain things because he is bringing about a plan. Because most people, same people would say, well, all of the surrounding nations should just cut off the airspace to Afghanistan. In America, the troops would be stuck there. She would have two options. To be leave her troops there to be stuck and be killed without any reinforcement, or to pull them out. But they don't do that. Why? Because it is a slow bleed militarily and a slow bleed economically. But America's there. And she's losing. I think the Taliban has control of over one-third of the country, or close to 40% of the country. That's not being reported in the news. And they continue to have successful hit after successful hit, and they continue to march on. But these are not terrorist attacks, because these are people from that land. The terrorists are the people who have about 2,000 military bases that are not even from the region. But America won't let it go because she wants to flood. She wants to do what Britain did to China with the opium wars. She wants to do that to Central Asia to try to weaken Russia. The stands, when I say the stands, I'm talking about Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and all of those stand nations over there. She wants to weaken, that's the former Soviet Union. She wants to weaken China. There's been an influx of drugs in that area. And America is doubling down not to fight terrorism because she's the greatest terrorist on the planet. She's there to protect the opium crops so that she can flood the world and the underbelly of Russia, China, and Iran and the stand nations with dope to weaken them just as the British did. You understand? I want you to listen to this four-minute clip here about America's intentions over there. All right?
Well, it's now more than 15 years since the U.S. invaded Afghanistan on the pretext of going after Osama bin Laden, who was falsely held to be responsible for the September 11, 2001 attacks. And the Taliban had offered to turn bin Laden over to the International Criminal Court as long as evidence were supplied, indicating that he might have had a role in that terrorist event. And Bush said, we know he's guilty. That is, we don't need evidence. So this led to the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. And now, as the official story tells us, bin Laden died midway into the Obama administration. Other sources say bin Laden died of kidney failure in 2001. In either case, he's gone, but the U.S. is still in Afghanistan. What's going on? Well, this latest announcement from the U.S. military that the new strategy involves bombing drug labs is quite humorous, given that the U.S. went into Afghanistan, in reality, largely to protect the heroin industry. Just as the Vietnam War was heavily driven by the fact that at that time most of the world's heroin was coming from the Golden Triangle in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, today the heroin epicenter has moved with the CIA's area of interest to Afghanistan. The Taliban had shut down opium production in Afghanistan, and this was not tolerable to the deep state, which profits to the tune of $1.5 trillion per year from the heroin industry, which it then moves in a shell game through various banks and corporations and leverages it into vastly more money than that. So they invaded Afghanistan in large part to restore the opium industry. And indeed, there was zero opium being produced from it before the U.S. invasion. The first year, the first thing the U.S. did was release all the drug lords, set them up, and tell them to plant away. Within 2 years, Afghanistan was setting world records every single year in opium production as U.S. troops guarded the poppy fields and supported the creation of a number of labs refining the opium into heroin, and it was then transported to the West in Global Hawks, a U.S. military vehicle that can fly all the way around the world without refueling. So that's where we stand today. Now they're announcing that they're going after the drug labs. They're bombing the drug labs. Just as in Syria, ISIS or Daesh was both the excuse for U.S. intervention and a very profitable tool to use against the Syrian government, here in Afghanistan, the drug issue is both an excuse for the U.S. to be there and, in fact, a highly profitable industry for the U.S. military or the corrupt elements therein. So it looks like we're moving into an even more Orwellian strategy in which they'll be using this extremely profitable heroin industry not only as a cash cow, but also as an excuse to stay in Afghanistan forever at the expense of the people dying of heroin overdoses here in big cities in the United States, at the expense of the U.S. taxpayer, and at the expense of world stability. So once again, this is bad news for those of us who wish our country here in the United States would live up to its ideals, but it's good news for the mafia, the international mafia that controls the drug trafficking industry.
He called it the deep state. He says that, and this is something, we see America bankrupt. This is why she refuses to go out of Afghanistan. He says they make money to the tune of $1.5 trillion each year off the poppy trade, the heroin, the opium trade that's coming out of Afghanistan. She's flooding the world with this. They were flying out kilos on Black Hawk helicopters and all of these things. Isn't that something? But she's fighting terrorism. See, she's being exposed for the world. And Russia just out. And go Google this. Russia openly said that America is flooding the nations with opium and with dope. And that they warned, they openly warned America that if they don't do something to stop it, Russia will intervene militarily. This would Google what I'm saying. This is what Allah is doing. He's setting them against each other to break the power of the white world and to liberate the indigenous population of the planet Earth, the original inhabitants. So you're seeing prophecy fulfilled right in front of you and don't realize it. You don't understand it because you're too preoccupied with your rap music. You're too preoccupied with what's the rapper today? Let me think of one of them, because I got almost cursed out by somebody because I didn't know who this woman was, Cardi B or something like that. It was crazy, man. I tell you, we are an insane people, and we need the protection and the help of Almighty God, Allah, because this devil is insane and he made us insane. But this is what is going on in the world. But you are too preoccupied with foolishness, gossip, celebrity lifestyles, and all of this stuff. When the whole world is hearing the echoes of all our war, and they are becoming louder and louder. You are focused on foolishness. This is why you have to be whipped. And this is why the Holy Quran said to those so-called Muslims who you want to pattern yourself after in the East. And the Holy Quran gives a warning to the mother city, talking about Mecca. It's talking about, in reality, that can be translated in theology as talking about the nation which Mecca is in. And it's talking about Arabia, which was given over to the House of Saud by the Brits and their allies, because the House of Saud is actually so-called Jews, right? Okay, this is why they're bulldozing the shrine of all of these prophets, and they're bulldozing the tomb of Muhammad. They're doing all of these things, and nobody said a word but the Stein Crescent Report. And you want a pattern after these corrupted leaders. But the reason they're shaking down their own brothers and sisters is because they're bankrupt and they see war coming. And they know prophecy says that they will be overthrown, and they will be overthrown violently because they would not yield to prophecy. They would not bow to the words of Prophet Muhammad or the Prophet Muhammad or the Messenger Muhammad of today. So they're in a bind financially. And I want you to listen to this. This is a long clip. I want you to listen to this, talking about the situation of the House of Saud, the financial situation. This is courtesy of the Real News Network. I want you to listen closely.
It's the Real News.
Let me stop, and I have to say this. Remember that this is one of the fiefdoms, one of the sheikhdoms, one of the so-called monarchs or kingdoms that is under the thumb of the Western world. Remember that now. So remember what I said at the beginning of the show, that these things will start collapsing and falling like dominoes. They will become more and more desperate because of the time. And we see desperation because America can't really help them. Britain can't really help them. France can't really help them because they're in debt, all of them, up to their eyeballs. So they're in trouble financially.
It's the Real News Network. I'm Sharmini Peiris coming to you from Baltimore. Since the famous visit by President Trump to Saudi Arabia in May, the monarchy has taken a series of bold steps to internally consolidate his power and to affirm its desire to be the regional power enabled by the United States. In the last few weeks, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has invited Lebanon's President Hariri to Saudi Arabia, where Hariri promptly resigned from the presidency. The prince arrested hundreds of top officials, including members of the royal family, and has taken steps to confiscate large parts of their wealth. As the Saudi war machine continues the onslaught in Yemen, Saudi officials made belligerent statements against Hezbollah in Lebanon and Iran and made overtures to cement an alliance with Israel. On to discuss these developments is Vijay Prasad. He is the executive director of the Tricontinental Institute for Social Research and is the chief editor of Leftward Books. He's the author of many books, among them The Death of a Nation and the Future of the Arab Revolution. Thanks for joining us, Vijay.
Pleasure, thanks.
Vijay, you penned a piece in Alternate titled An Upstart Saudi Prince Threw a Tantrum Felt Around the World. Where do you see Prince bin Salman taking Saudi Arabia? What are his objectives here?
Well, there are two ways to look at the maneuvering by Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. One is the internal problems faced by Saudi Arabia. The other is the external environment. The internal problems are quite severe. As you know, Saudi Arabia for the last several years has been pumping an enormous amount of petroleum from under the sands and has, as a consequence, deflated oil prices. This has meant that Saudi Arabia's exchequer has been running very large balance of payments deficits. Despite the fact that Saudi Arabia is a very rich country, the low price of oil, its reliance on oil exports, has meant it has had some serious problems. So internally, there's been a crackdown on so-called corruption. The Saudi crown prince has arrested people essentially to shake them down for hundreds of billions of dollars to cover this balance of payments deficit and to enable Saudi Arabia to increase investment for some of its projects, including a new city it wants to build in the north. That's the domestic question. And related to this domestic question is Prince Mohammed bin Salman's claim that he wants to go after extremists inside the kingdom. He believes that corruption and extremism are the two big problems. Now, of course, he is on the same front, had the audacity to start an international conflict, or in other words, to intensify an international conflict. And here, as you know, Saudi Arabia has had a very forward policy in Syria, trying to overthrow the government there. Saudi Arabia has been since 2015 at war in Yemen, rather bloody war in Yemen. Saudi Arabia has tried to isolate Qatar, largely because it feels that Qatar is too close to Iran. And now Saudi Arabia is interested in putting pressure on the Lebanese government so that the main partner in that government, which is Hezbollah, a group very close to Iran, will be overthrown. So the government will be overthrown in Lebanon. There'll be a constitutional crisis. And somehow, quite bizarrely, Saudi Arabia hopes in this way to marginalize Lebanon. The Arab League met on Sunday. It's a very truncated Arab League, doesn't have many members. And it was essentially Saudi Arabia, the UAE, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain that spoke very fiercely about Iran, about pushing Iran back to its borders. So there are two things happening here. One is Saudi Arabia essentially struggling to maintain its balance of payments. And secondly, Saudi Arabia struggling to push Iran back into its borders.
Vijay, you mentioned the trade balance and the financial crises that the Saudis are experiencing. And related to this, we see that the Crown Prince Salman has decided to issue stocks for the oil company Aramco. Now, President Trump already tweeted that he hopes that the public offering will be done in the U.S. stock market. Now, is this kind of behavior prompted by the United States to offer up more of Saudi Arabia, open up its markets, and share the wealth? Or do you think that this is an effort on the part of the Crown Prince to address his financial crisis, as you put it?
Well, for several years now, Saudi Arabia has hinted that it would take Aramco, the Saudi oil, company, onto the public for the public. In other words, to bring it onto the stock market, and this was made very clear during the McKinsey written report called Vision 2030, where Saudi Arabia's diversification of the economy was going to be financed by this public offering of Aramco. Now, the estimate is that this public offering will raise $2 trillion. You know, this is by many fold, 4 to 5 times larger than the Alibaba offering was able to raise. That's the largest we have so far in world history. So it is now assumed that at least the Saudis have been saying they'll raise $2 trillion. Others are a little more skeptical, saying it will be in the range of hundreds of billions of dollars. And there is some jockeying going on. I mean, Credit Suisse, for instance, a bank very close to the Saudis, has been eager to run this public offering. Whether it takes place in New York or elsewhere is up in the air. I don't think housing the offering in New York is going to be anything more than a sort of propaganda victory for Donald Trump. After all, the offering will be done, dollars will be raised. We'll see where Saudi Arabia parks that money, whether it parks it in Switzerland or in the United States or wherever. I mean, these are the kind of complexities of the public offering that have not been made clear yet. But certainly it appears that the United States, or at least Donald Trump, is eager for the Saudis to put Aramco on the block, raise capital, and move that capital into the United States.
Now, Vijay, Alastair Cook from Consortium News claims that when Trump visited Saudi Arabia, he sidestepped official channels in order to achieve three goals with the Sunni alliance. First was to roll back Iran and Hezbollah. Two was normalizing relations between Israel and the Arab world. And three, creating a Palestinian state or something resembling a state. Now, Crook argues, however, that all three goals depend on Israel's cooperation, which is not forthcoming, and Trump's entire plan is therefore falling apart. Do you agree with this analysis?
Well, I don't actually believe that there's a Sunni bloc and a Shia bloc. I think that's a very narrow way of looking at this. After all, there are countries like Algeria, there is even Egypt, which has, you know, a complicated relationship with Saudi Arabia. The current ruler in Egypt relies on Saudi Arabia. He's essentially taken a large loan from Saudi Arabia. But the Egyptian population is not keen, I think, to be seen as part of a Sunni bloc. So I don't think that the premise here is acceptable. I think that there is indeed a bloc set up by Saudi Arabia with UAE, Bahrain, and perhaps one or two of its other allies to push Iran back to its borders. That's certainly part of Saudi Arabia's ambition. I think linked here is the now public the conversations between Israel and Saudi Arabia that have been made public. In other words, they are now accepting or agreeing that they're talking behind closed doors. They have things in common. One of them, of course, is rolling Iran back to its borders. That's entirely a plausible joint agenda item for Israel and Saudi Arabia. But I don't think there's a Sunni bloc that shares this agenda. I think on the question of Palestine, this is rather a bleak position as far as the countries are concerned. You know, we've seen now the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and other countries, of course, Egypt and Jordan long ago, making their peace with Israel. Prince Mohammed bin Salman, when he called Mr. Hariri, Saad Hariri, to Saudi Arabia, and where he resigned, also called Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, to Saudi Arabia. And one wonders what their conversation was about. I think there's pressure going to be on the Palestinian Authority to accede to some kind of Saudi line, but I doubt very much that the Palestinian people are going to accept any such agenda.
Right. Vijay, let's get back to your alternate piece where you call the Crown Prince's behavior a tantrum. Are you implying that the Crown Prince is not actually acting out of a planned initiative, but reacting impulsively to events beyond his control? What is threatening the throne of Saudi Arabia these days?
Well, I mean, look, there's all kinds of evidence that you can perhaps put together to suggest there's a plan. For instance, Prince Walid, Prince bin Talal, Walid bin Talal, who is the biggest, richest man in Saudi Arabia, is partly an investor in Twitter, was in a Twitter war with Donald Trump. In fact, quite an abusive war with Donald Trump, I think a year and a half ago. So perhaps this is payback against Prince bin Talal. You know, it could be. Who knows? It could very well be that the United States wants to put pressure on Saudi Arabia to make a deal with Israel to squeeze Iran. But I don't actually think that this entirely makes sense. Some of these maneuvers are longstanding. They predate Donald Trump being in office. They predate the visit by Jared Kushner. For instance, the attempt by this Crown Prince to use the assets inside the kingdom to diversify the economy, this is a longstanding desire of sections of the ruling bloc in Saudi Arabia. I think this desire to push Iran back to its borders predates Donald Trump. This goes back to when the Saudi royal family intervened delightfully in Syria, participating in wrecking that country. So I think that, you know, there might very well have been conversations between Jared Kushner and the Crown Prince. They might have come up with some of these tactical maneuvers in the present. But I don't think this is some sort of new plot schemed, you know, around the orb when Donald Trump, King Salman, Sisi and others put their hands on that shining round object at the center for counterterrorism that was created inside Saudi Arabia. I think this is a long-standing policy to, on the one side, somehow salvage a Saudi economy despite low oil prices, and to somehow reassert Saudi power against Iran in the region.
And finally, Vijay, I cannot leave this conversation without asking you, where you think Israel is at in this entire configuration?
I think Israel is making some very serious errors. For instance, if Israel believes, and if Saudi Arabia believes, that Hezbollah can somehow politically be sidelined in Lebanon, this is a great mistake. I mean, Hezbollah, its political wing, its military wing, are an essential part of both Lebanese political life and its security architecture. Hezbollah has been greatly strengthened by its experience in the war in Syria, and I think any attempt to break it politically or militarily is going to fail. So I think this is a great error by the Israelis. I think rather than come to the table and try to make peace with the Palestinians to produce a genuine path that would be beneficial to the occupied Palestinian people, I think rather than do that, these maneuvers are simply distracting and dangerous even for Israel.
All right, Vijay, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you for joining us here on the Real News Network.
Of the Saudi regime, and he talks about how they're in a desperate situation, desperate times, and how they're trying to keep their sway in the Middle East. He also talked about Trump and how they're trying to, with Israel, trying to forge some semblance of a Palestinian state. That's not what they're trying to do. But he was giving you that. But he said this: the Palestinians would never go for that. And what he was saying is exactly what Elijah Muhammad said, that they will not be satisfied as long as Israel is in Palestine. There will be no pacification anymore. This thing is coming to a head. And so you see the Saudis gripping, grasping. They even shaking down their own family members to try to get money to keep the economy propped up. This is what America's doing. She's over in Afghanistan bombing the hell out of people and selling dope, right? She's bumming the hell out of people in Syria and in Iraq and destabilizing Lebanon so that she can get the gas fields so that Israel can seize those newfound gas fields off Lebanon and off Syria so that this can go hand in hand with the new pipeline that they want to build to go up to Europe so that they can strangle Russia economically and militarily. If these things were to happen, the black man would still be underfoot of this beast because this white man will have economic power indefinitely. So this cannot happen. This cannot happen. So as you see, all of America's allies under strain, they might show their military power, but they're under strain, and each time they thump their chest militarily, this costs money. When you send a warship to far off shores, you got to pay for gas. You got to pay for logistics. You got to pay for troop deployment. You got to pay for the arrangement with other countries. You just don't leave and don't have maintenance on this stuff. When you do carrier groups, it's big bucks, tens of millions to close to billions of dollars. When you're doing these aerial drills, these war games, this stuff is not free. So as you're muscle flexing and thumping your chest, you're also burying the empire further and further into an economic tailspin or debt that she would never be able to dig out of. You understand? So they see a world that is collapsing, a world that is falling, a world that is dying. Brothers and sisters, I know we're at the end of the show, but would you please give me about 15 or 16 more minutes? I want to play this clip to show you about the economic situation. I was going to go off the air on the right time, but I got three clips. One is 14 minutes. So I'm begging you, we'll see where we go from there. Don't answer your phones. Don't click over on your internet if you get disconnected. Please call back. Go back and listen to the show. Or if you get disconnected in it within this five-minute frame, call back in. Same thing with you online. You know the drills. I want you to listen to what they're saying about the situation economically. See, all of these things bear down economically. And without the military, without the economic part, you have no military. 30 years. You understand? It's all coming to an end. But I want you to listen to what they're saying about the economy. Pay close attention.
Welcome to the Silver Report Uncut. And there's a very interesting speech that John Williams, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, came out and he stated. And it was a speech he gave at the Asia Economic Policy Conference. It was called When the United States Sneezes. It's a very interesting topic because what he's actually saying is that the world is entering a very dangerous stage, that if we enter any kind of recession, that we are completely done as a civilization, a world civilization, because what's going to entail is that everyone will need to go to negative interest rates. Now, he brought up a policy, he brought up an idea, it's called the zero lower bound. And just to explain a little bit about what that is, the zero lower bound problem is something, it's a macroeconomic problem. It occurs when the short-term nominal interest rate is at or near zero. What that does is it causes a liquidity trap. It limits the capacity that the central bank has to be able to stimulate any kind of economic growth. Now, some people have stated that this isn't a problem at all. For example, Milton Friedman, he said that a zero nominal interest rate presents no problem for monetary policy. And according to Friedman, the central bank can increase the monetary base even if the interest rate vanishes. It only needs to continue buying bonds. And we see that we are on this process of normalization. Now, one thing that we've not seen is anything close to normal in the economy of the United States. And what I mean by that is that they continue to buy bonds. They've not let these bonds expire. They've not emptied out their entire portfolio of these bonds at the central bank. They've also not normalized the interest rate whatsoever. I mean, these little quarter point jumps are simply not normal whatsoever for the United States economy. So Friedman, he coined the term helicopter drops. And, you know, this is a famous saying that a lot of you have probably heard. But it's supposed to illustrate how central banks could always generate spending and inflation. And he used the example of a helicopter flying over a town, dropping dollar bills from the sky, which households would gather in perfectly equal shares. And economists have argued that real-world versions of this idea would work at zero or lower bound. And he said typically helicopter drops have been interpreted as involved as a central bank directly financing the budget deficit. So he said helicopter drops could always raise demand and inflation. So he pretty much was stating that the zero lower bound has no effect on the American economy whatsoever. And now I wanted to talk about something for just one moment, because we look at what's going on in Sweden right now. The central banks of Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden, all of them, they were among the first to go in and push their policy rates into negative territory. Because that's really what he's suggesting. He's suggesting that right now the interest rates are so low that during the next recession, that are worldwide, we're going to have to push interest rates into negative territory. Now, much, for example, Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden, are already still continuing at negative interest rates. Moody's Investor Service, they concluded that all those three countries, Sweden is the most at risk. In fact, they said that they have an ultimately unsustainable asset bubble. And what has happened is developed a monstrous housing bubble in Sweden. The Riksbank, it has not been successful in engineering higher inflation. Sweden's GDP growth continues to be among the strongest in the advanced economies. At the same time, the unintended consequences of the ultra-loose monetary policy are becoming increasingly apparent in the form of rapid rising house prices and persistently strong growth in mortgage credit. And whenever you look at what happened in Sweden, it is absolutely astronomical that we've never seen housing prices just this way. That's what happens whenever you implement things like negative interest rates. So from his speech, he said, quote, if the interest rates are only around 2-3% when the next recession hits. Now, keep in mind, this is from the Federal Reserve with the same political talking points to come out along with Janet Yellen.